steady to be up and about and around in the morning? You can't trust any of them, can you, to tell you the truth? May not be happy, we do it anyway. I don't know. I don't know how well I can get this on the camera, but we were talking about this yesterday in class in Martin Luther and Justification by Faith. And this was the seal that Martin Luther designed for himself. And I don't know how well you can see it, but let me read the explanation of it. This is written by Martin Luther himself. The first thing expressed in my seal is a cross, black within the heart, to put me in mind that faith in Christ crucified saves us. Okay? For with the heart man believeth unto righteousness. Now although the cross is black, mortified, and intended to cause pain, yet it does not change the color of the heart, but does not destroy nature, does not kill, but keeps alive. For the just shall live by faith. But this heart is fixed upon the center of a white rose, to show that faith causes joy, consolation, and peace. The rose is white, not red, because white is the ideal color of all angels and blessed spirits. It goes on, and it's a pretty good explanation of salvation as he designs his own personal seal. And we find statements from him towards the end of his life that seem to contradict that. And by the next generation, the Lutheran Church in general contradicts that. Though actually that seal is distributed by was distributed by a Lutheran church. That's how I got it. We had finished the bottom of page 90. We talked about the Garden Brethren. Okay? We are ready for the next paragraph. In Worms, the Baptist grew greatly in popularity and influence. The Lutheran pastor, Jacob Kautz, became convinced of the Baptist doctrines and identified with them. Jacob Kautz became convinced of the Baptist doctrines and identified with them. You understand, when a Lutheran pastor did that, the impact. Most of these communities had one church. So when the Lutheran pastor identifies with this doctrine, that doesn't just affect him. That affects the worship services, for lack of a better term, in the region. His successor at the Lutheran church, after he gets kicked out, also became a Baptist. The preachers were ordered out of town by the city council, but they refused to leave. They refused to leave. The local authorities were afraid to arrest them. Afraid to arrest them because the preachers were so popular with the local population. Afraid to arrest them because the preachers were so popular with the local population. A large Baptist church continued with relatively little persecution in Worms for several years. That again, they were just so popular, the local authorities were afraid of stirring up riots and so forth if they went after them as was being done in so many other towns. Persecution spread to the previously safe town of Strasbourg. The pastor there, Pilgrim Marbeck, was imprisoned and wrote a tremendous defense of separation of church and state. Was imprisoned and wrote a tremendous defense of separation of church and state. Now, again, significance of that, when you look at the impact of a book, most books are sold through the personality and connections of the person who wrote them, public relations campaign or whatever. When a book outlives the author, it's because somebody found something worthy in the book. When the book is still in print 500 years later, that means in generation after generation, people have found something worthy in it and indicates its significance. So here's a book on separation of church and state, still being printed, still being published, still influencing people. More in Europe than here, but nonetheless, it's still around. Any book that survives, the old joke is, any book that survives 5 months is a successful book in this day and age. Any book that survives 500 years, you can put that down as a book having impact. Marbeck, a former Catholic priest, was released from prison but banished from Strasbourg. He moved to Augsburg when he soon died. The cause of his death is debated. Some historical accounts say that he was executed. Others say that he died a natural death. It's important to note that some of these persecutions came from authorities who acknowledged the Roman Catholic Church, others from those who recognized Lutheran leadership. Both Lutheran and Roman Catholic leaders took the same position with respect to dealing with Baptists and others who taught religious liberty. Both Lutheran and Roman Catholic leaders took the same position with respect to dealing with Baptists and others who taught religious liberty. 1529, Charles V, Emperor of Germany, dealt with the rise of the Anabaptists. His edict following the church council at Spires reads in part, "Clearly ordained that all and every Anabaptist or rebaptized person, whether male or female, being of ripe years and understanding, should be deprived of life, and according to the circumstances of the individual, be put to death by fire, sword, or otherwise judged, tried, or dealt with under pain of heavy and severe punishment." The heavy and severe punishment being for those that refuse to put Baptists to death. This is the Charles V, who's the Emperor of Germany, and also Italy, and Spain, and several European areas. That decree is for all of those areas. If you're a Baptist or you're rebaptized, the penalty is death. That'd test a person's spiritual life. You convince that you're saved. You convince that saved people should be baptized, but being baptized can generate the death penalty for you. Would you go ahead and be faithful to the Lord and be baptized? I know people don't get baptized because it's inconvenient, much less because there's a death penalty on it. And that's male or female, anybody judged to be old enough to be responsible for their own actions. And we'll see much more about that in a bit. The results of this decree led to the deaths of thousands of Baptists. However, the movement continued to spread. In many German states, there was massive persecution of Anabaptists. However, some German princes defied the orders of the emperor. The ruler of the region of Hesse is remembered as Philip the Magnanimous. Philip the Magnanimous, Magnanimous. Or Philip of Hesse. Magnanimous just means very generous, very gracious, very kind. And he was not a person who wanted to put people to death for no reason. He refused to go along with any kind of religious persecution. And he protected the Anabaptists and other nonconformists in his state. He protected the Anabaptists and other nonconformists in his state. He eloquently defended religious freedoms, but his attempts to defy the emperor were relatively futile. He was imprisoned and eventually was forced to cooperate with Charles V. Whenever you have a local leader like this, at first refusing to go along with a national or empire or regional-wide persecution, why do they always end up giving in? Pretty simple. They don't have the bigger army. In a conflict between a regional leader and a national leader, who has the bigger army? The national leader. It would be like religious laws against religious liberty in the United States, and the governor of Illinois says, "I refuse to cooperate with those laws." Well, I don't think the Illinois State Police is going to be a match at the border with the United States Army. And this was the kind of thing these folks faced. People of decent conscience who couldn't sleep at night if they were responsible for the death of innocents still found themselves up against it. Well, however, Hesse continued to remain a safer region for Anabaptists than most of Germany. He finally had to agree to punish them, but never did seem to be very effective at catching them. You sort of guessed his heart wasn't in it. In Schwarzburg, the local ruler, Count Gunther, protected the Baptists at the risk of his own life. at the risk of his own life. He is fortunately successful. Relatively small city, but very well fortified, very well defended. People assumed it was not worth the risk, not worth the loss, to try and take it. And there are lessons in that. There for another class. Baptists were also persecuted in the German town of Wassenburg by a local ruler named Werner von Pollent. Under the leadership of Johannes, J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S, Johannes, Campanus, C-A-M-P-A-N-U-S, C-A-M-P-A-N-U-S, a local preacher, the church in Wassenburg determined to use their freedom as a base for sending missionaries throughout Germany. Again, we talked about this. Some churches are uniquely used of God in the preparation and sending out of preachers. That's not every church's ministry, but throughout church history, you find churches God raises up to do that. The normal format for that in our day and age is a church that has a Bible college. But if you go back in that time, some of the training was done differently than the way we're used to, but nonetheless, there were churches raised up that uniquely had a ministry and were sending out preachers. This so angered Melanchthon, Martin Luther's chief assistant, that he pressed for persecution of the Baptists in the region. Campanus was arrested and spent 20 years in prison, dying there. Most of the missionaries ordained by his church were also executed. Hubmaier was arrested and burned at the stake. We've mentioned him before. He's a Swiss Anabaptist that fled to Germany, Balthasar Hubmaier. The Hubmaier story is one that sometimes looked at and people don't tell the last chapter of. Twice in Switzerland, he was threatened with either with being drowned unless he recanted, and he recanted. And they let him go. And then he went right back to preaching what he had been preaching. And so sometimes people have looked at that as a story of cowardice or whatever and have spoken unkindly, and you understand why they do that. But here's the rest of the story. The third time he was given a choice between recanting and being burned at the stake. And on that occasion, he would not recant and was burnt at the stake. So from my perspective, if you tell the story of the twice that he gave in, and it's very easy to be critical, none of us have ever been dangling from a rod that where we were going to be lowered under the water until we drowned. There's probably something about being tied to something like that that affects your perspective. But he did twice recant and go back to being a preacher. The third time, when faced with being burned at the stake, he refused to recant and was burned at the stake. So, you know, if you tell the story of his two failures, it's probably legitimate, only legitimate to tell the story of when he did stand. Okay? 3 days later, his wife was drowned. In many German towns, and you understand when folks were being faithful to the Lord, a man had to face this, being faithful to the Lord in those days. He was not just risking his life, he was risking the life of his family to be faithful to the Lord. In many German towns, the Anabaptists were so popular that local authorities were careful about how they carried out their persecutions. Throughout this period, for example, there was a large Baptist church in Cologne, Germany. This church was completely harassed, but it escaped violent persecutions that so many Baptist churches had to undergo. Constantly harassed, but escaped violent persecution. In other words, nobody was being killed, even though they were being harassed constantly. That is the case in some countries today. If you were to go to Italy or Spain or some of the other Catholic countries, nobody's being put to death, but you find all kinds of obstacles and fines and this, that, and the other, even though it's been centuries since anybody was actually executed. In the communist countries, they always claim they never executed anybody for religion. But what they did was take preachers and church members and so forth and accuse them of homosexuality and or child molestation, even though those things obviously were not true. There were millions of Christians executed in the Soviet Union, but according to the record of this in the Soviet Union, there was never anybody executed for being a Christian. They were always executed for homosexuality or child molestation. They apparently had millions and millions of homosexuals and child molesters in Russia because they executed millions and millions of people who just happened to be faithful church members. Four major controversies from this period involve the Baptist. And one we have mentioned already, quickly we mention it again. The first had to do with Thomas Munzer, M-U-N-Z-E-R, and the Peasants' Revolt. The Peasants' Revolt. Munzer had been a Roman Catholic priest before his conversion. He became a Lutheran pastor and received his first pastorate at the direct recommendation of Martin Luther. Munzer eventually broke with the Lutherans over his teaching of separation of church and state. He starts out a Lutheran preacher, becomes an independent preacher. He led the peasants in demanding political, economic, and religious freedom. Political, economic, and religious freedom. His views were remarkably similar to those of the founders of the American Republic. Unfortunately, he did not have the great military leaders in his movement that we saw in the American War for Independence. His armies were quickly and totally crushed. Quickly and totally crushed. One of the things you see in this is that in the feudal system, peasants did not serve in any level in the military other than as a foot soldier. So none of them gained any experience in leading men in battle. In the American War for Independence, when the colonies were British colonies, they were all expected to have their own militias. They all engaged in warfare against the French and warfare against the Indians. And so there were men in the leadership of the American War for Independence who had significant military experience. And nobody just walks out and is a successful military leader. It's an acquired skill through training and experience. And in the Peasants' Revolt, they simply had no one that was a trained military leader that knew how you coordinated infantry and cavalry and artillery and how you positioned your men and how you took care of things and how you built and developed supply lines. They had lots of brave men willing to fight, had no idea what they were doing. And throughout the history of the world, you see that over and over again, that it's not just bravery and commitment and willingness to sacrifice. Military situations is a learned skill. You have to have experienced, trained military leaders to have any chance to be successful. That is why you would see during the communist era, every so often there'd be an uprising in a communist country, and the people would rise up and want to overthrow the communist leadership and have initial successes, but then quickly be crushed because they didn't have military people and military equipment. And probably most of the people who take this course are too young to remember this, but I remember well in the 80s, Tiananmen Square in China, where the people arose, and they filled the square there in the capital with hundreds of thousands of people demanding freedom. And it was a very moving thing to watch. And then the Chinese army came in. And there's a very famous, often replayed scene of one protester standing in front of a tank, and the tank tries to go around him, and he moves over so that he stays in front of the tank. And that particular tank driver didn't want to run over an innocent civilian and didn't. And so it looked like the guy defeated the tank all by himself. That's how it looked for a day or two. And then the tanks came in force and ran over the people and massacred thousands and thousands of them. And imprisoned thousands and thousands, and the move for freedom was done. And you couldn't watch without being overwhelmingly sympathetic, even to the point of your heart almost breaking, for the folks that were standing for freedom. They had no military leadership, no military equipment. And the bottom line of a story like that is usually written. What changed later with the fall of Russia is when the military joined the people that were protesting. And that was another moving scene. It was captured on live television. The Kremlin is ringed with tanks, and the whole area is surrounded by people protesting, demanding freedom. And, of course, the barrels of the cannon on top of the tank are pointed at the people. Then all of a sudden, they switch, and they turn around, and all the tank cannon barrels are pointed at the Kremlin. And it was over for communism then, but that was because the army sided with the rebels. In the peasants' revolt, the army's composed of the nobles whom the rebels are rebelling against. So you can figure how all that works. Well, Munzer's often called an Anabaptist because of his fervent devotion to the idea of religious liberty. Again, we said in Germany, the name Anabaptist means you believe in separation of church and state. It doesn't mean the whole set of truths we previously talked about. He's not a Baptist because he continued to teach the baptism of infants by sprinkling. He met with a group of Swiss and German Baptists who refused to endorse his rebellion. Some did not feel that violent rebellion was ever justified. Others believed that the time was not right and the rebellion had no chance of success. I mean, those are real issues. I personally believe that tyrannical governments should be overthrown if the people have the capacity to do so. A bunch of people going out and getting themselves killed for no reason, though, is not something I recommend. You have to have some prospect of success, some reason to believe you can tip the scales of power, some reason to believe that this is to be done rather than just organizing a bunch of people to go out and get killed. A lot of what happened in the early days of the rebellion in Syria, the civil war in Syria, not now, the rebellions overtaken by Muslim extremists, but in some of the early days of the rebellion, they were trying to overthrow Assad, who's a wicked dictator, and people were taking to the streets demanding freedom, and they meant well, and they were trying to achieve something good, and you know what happened to them? Mostly they get killed, and nothing gets better. Now, there's a lot of thinking that needs to go into this kind of thing. I personally believe rebellion to overthrow a tyrannical government can be a good thing. That's why I'm free today, is because some people rebelled against a tyrannical government over 200 years ago. But there's a lot to be calculated, and a lot of rebellions do not make things better. In the communist countries, in the early days of rebellion, they'd hold the military back so that all the rebels would come out in public so they could know who they all were. And then they send the military in after they know who they all are and can easily kill them. Well, others believe the time was not right and the rebellion had no chance of success. Many Anabaptists, however, fought in Munzer's army. However ill-conceived Munzer's timing and military leadership were, he should be remembered as a friend of freedom. Had he been successful, he undoubtedly would be remembered in the same way that George Washington is today. The Anabaptists were such zealous advocates of religious liberty that the name Anabaptist was soon applied to all. Who stood for separation of church and state. In next year's church history class, History of Professed Christianity, we'll study the Crusades. A preacher came along who began preaching that God wanted to liberate the Mideast from the Muslims with an army of children. And he began to preach that God's hand would supernaturally be upon these children and they could march to the Middle East and defeat the Muslims, and the goodness and purity and so forth of the children would make them invincible. He actually gathers supplies and gathers thousands of children for what becomes known as the Children's Crusade. And they march off, some of them with the blessing of their parents who think they're going to be supernaturally protected. And they're there to free the Mideast from Muslim control. And very emotional preaching and a very worthy cause. And what do you think happened when the children got there? They got seized and sold as slaves. Great preaching, great cause, not a chance of success. And very often that the image is, you know, well, God is going to make this successful. God's going to do something supernatural. I even believe during the American Civil War, there were folks in the South who thought that God was going to supernaturally intervene on the side of the Confederate armies. But the South did not have the means for producing weapons. They had the weapons they had at the start of the war. When weapons were captured and worn out, they could not produce new weapons to replace them. And God did not supernaturally rain muskets and cannon down from the sky. and they did not win, which you could have predicted from the beginning. Well, another controversial figure from this period was Melchior Hoffman, M-E-L-C-H-O-I-R. Melchior Hoffman, H-O-F-F-M-A-N. Hoffman was a former Lutheran preacher who was identified with the Anabaptists because he immersed only believers. He did believe in baptism by immersion of believers only. He immersed only believers. He was not a complete Baptist, however, because he did not accept the sole authority of Scripture. He believed that he was continuing to receive revelations from God. Anytime somebody tells you they are receiving direct revelation from God, there are three possibilities. Okay? They're a con artist, trying to fool people. They're mentally imbalanced, and they're hearing things that aren't being said. Or they're hearing from demons, because God is not giving new revelation today. And I cannot tell you how many times personally I've come across people, or you read about people in the major religious movements, and they're based on this revelation they got from God, and they're able to convince people God told them this. So he's convincing people, he's got revelation from God, and he prophesied the end of the world for 1533. Prophesied the end of the world. By the way, if you'll study, there have been many, many prophecies of the end of the world. I listed in an article I wrote, I think, 100 some of them, and I by no means got them all. There's always somebody ready to come along and predict the end of the world. In my lifetime, we've seen the end of the world on a number of occasions. Okay? And so he, in 1533, he returned to Strasbourg in defiance of city authorities to await the second coming. He goes there, his followers go there, the Lord's come back. They've got food, you know, for a restricted period of time because the Lord's got to come back in that year, and they're defying the authorities, and it doesn't matter if you get killed because, you know, the world's going to end in a little bit anyway, and you don't need massive supplies. You just need to last for a little while, and guess what happened? The Lord didn't come. Food ran out. Everybody got arrested. There are always people with a prophecy of the end of the world. I'm trying to think of the guy that just a couple years ago, his name, Harold Camping. I have trouble remembering his name for some reason. He wrote a book entitled 1994 that was published in the early 1990s about why Christ had to come back and the world had to end in 1994. I bought my copy of the book in 1995 for 25 cents. Okay. But I knew people. I actually, in the church I was pastoring at the time, we lost a family who was so, we got to get ready for the end. They were so motivated to that. And then he refigured. He'd calculated wrong. It wasn't 1995. It was 2011. So he preached that and preached that and preached that and preached that. And by this time, we had 24-hour news channels. Almost nobody heard his prophecy about 1994, but in 2011, everybody got all the details of his prophecy. And I know an individual who went out and decided to live it up, ran his credit cards to the max, because you're not going to have to make payments. It was September of 2011, and all summer long, he's buying everything on credit he can, and living luxuriously, and eating at expensive restaurants, and buying whatever clothes that cross your mind you might want, because you're never going to have to pay the credit card bills because the world is ending. That was in the summer of 2011. Guess how all that worked out? I mean, always somebody has a date when the world is ending. Things are collapsing. The tribulation is starting. Christ is returning. And they get all that by divine revelation. There's only one problem. When they thought they were having that divine revelation, well, they could be a con artist and they never really thought they had it. Or they might be mentally imbalanced. And I think most often some demon is telling them all that. And so they think that's what's going to happen. But same thing. He was arrested, spent the next 10 years in prison, dying there in 1543. Another important controversy involved Baptist preacher Hans Hutt. And this is an interesting one because there has been some similar controversy in our day and age. Hutt extended his teaching of separation of church and state. Hutt extended his teaching of separation of church and state to a teaching of the separation of individual Christians and the state. It's not just, he said, are the church and state separate? Individual Christians and the state are separate. He spoke against military service, paying taxes to the German state, and recognition of the civil government as ordained by God. Paying taxes to the German state, recognition of the civil government as ordained by God. In our own day, people following the same thought process have said things like you should not register to vote, you should not get a birth certificate, you shouldn't get a marriage license. They believe in being married by a preacher but not getting a license with the state, and not paying taxes, and et cetera, not serving the military. And they are teaching the separation of the individual from the state, and they call it being a sovereign citizen. A few years ago, that was making some headway in independent Baptist circles. Then believing in getting a driver's license. And it's not making much headway now. The movement has fallen off dramatically. Can you guess why it might have fallen off dramatically? Well, what do you think happens to people that make any money that don't pay taxes? You end up in jail. There are men writing from prison the justification for their not paying taxes. But again, you know where they're writing it from? From prison. That discourages people from copying them. There are folks who did not, couples that did not get a marriage license. And then somewhere down the road, the guy takes off and his wife can't get child support or anything of that nature because they're not married and you have to go to the system to get child support. And they said, we don't be part of the system. So the system basically says, you're on your own. And you could go on and on with this happening over and over again. Now, some of these people, I know some of these people, and they're good people, and they really meant well. And you can understand why they didn't want to pay taxes to a wicked government, a government that pays for abortions and promotes homosexuality and so forth. And part of their thought was to go off the grid, no birth certificate so folks can't find you, no marriage license, people can't find you. And they would look, and all over America, there are millions of people in the United States illegally that are off the grid. And so they say, we can go off the grid. The problem is, they never really wanted to live like that, off the grid. They wanted to do a lot of things that involved being on the grid. So I knew people that would not pay their taxes, but they wanted a credit card. Well, guess what? You're going to have to go into the economic system to get a credit card. And there, I'm sure there are exceptions to this. I'm thinking of one family I know right away who really has seems to have gone off the grid. But they also never made much money and consequently never owed much in taxes. And people trying to go off the grid found out they often didn't want to live that way, off the grid. And in this day of computerization, it's really hard to get off the grid. If you've got cable television, you're plugged into the system, and your records can be found. If you've got internet, you're plugged into the system, and your records can be found. The reason that doesn't affect millions of people living in the United States is because our government has no desire to find them all and deal with them. And for good reason, collecting 12 million undocumented immigrants in the United States would be a task no government's ever going to undertake. It's just not going to happen. But this didn't work then, and it doesn't work now because government is not going to tolerate the idea of sovereign citizens. That's why I've said to my friends who didn't want to pay income tax, God bless you, and if that's your conviction, I admire you for it. I do hope you're willing to spend the rest of your life in federal prison, though, because that's the price tag. And other faith, if you're willing to live without everything that being on the grid gives you, fine. But don't assume you can have it both ways, because you can't. Well, It's easy to understand his perspective when you remember the times in which he lived. Armies were being used to persecute Christians. So did you want to serve in the army? No. Taxes made it financially possible. So did you want to pay for your own persecutors? Civil government had so rebelled against God that it had become the agent of religious persecution. However, most Baptists rejected Hutt's approach. His teachings were often used by various rulers as ground for persecuting all Baptists. Hutt was killed in Augsburg while trying to escape from prison. He got in prison, felt justified in escaping and going on the run, but got killed trying to escape. Most famous controversy of this period had to do with the Kingdom of Munster. An itinerant preacher, Jan Matthias, J-A-N, it was Kingdom of Munster is D. Itinerant preacher, Jan Matthias, J-A-N, M-A-T-T-H-Y-S. Jan Matthias, who had been a follower of Melchior Hoffman, claimed revelation from God. It's amazing how often that happens. There's a leader who claims revelation, and because he claims revelation, he gets fame or wealth or whatever, and then one of his followers decides they get revelation too. Okay. I don't know, again, your age bracket. Very popular TV show, probably the 60s, The Munsters. If y'all look at me blank-faced, haven't got it, never mind. It was about a bunch of very strange characters, and they took the name Munster from this city, and because it sounded like the name Monster, which means nothing to anybody taking this class, so we'll move on. They defied the government. Nothing like starting the day off by feeling old. They defied the government of Germany. And declared that they were establishing the New Jerusalem. A communist economic system was established by John Leyden, L-E-Y-D-E-N, John Leyden. Actually, I had a person by that name who took this course once. John Leyden, L-E-Y-D-E-N, who taught separation of church and state. Leyden attracted many Anabaptists to Munster by promising them religious freedom. He sort of took over John Matthias' movement, promising them religious freedom. He taught polygamy, that a man should have more than one wife. And amazingly enough, he married several wives. Not because he just wanted to be married to them, but because God told him to. And people commenting on the time said it was interesting how kind God was to him, because he was only telling him to marry beautiful women. Never once did God tell him to marry a homely woman. Purely coincidence, of course. Taught polygamy, and finally claimed to personally be the Messiah. He claimed to be the Messiah. I've met the Messiah 3 or 4 times in my ministry, and the only one true Messiah. Anybody who knows the history of Ravenswood knows that it was once sort of haunted by a character who claimed to be Zeus, the Greek god of gods, kept trying to come to services at Ravenswood. This was before my time, but share the glory of having the opportunity to go to church with Zeus, the king of the gods. A couple of times they had to carry Zeus out of services, which is not very kingly for the king of the gods if a couple of people can carry you out. All kinds of messiahs, and John Leyden was one. Munster was finally surrounded by an army composed of both Roman Catholics and Lutherans. They were able to put aside their differences to deal with this. Because so many Anabaptists participated in the defense of Munster. Many Anabaptists participated in the defense of Munster. The Anabaptists have often been blamed for the excesses of Matthias and Leyden. Because so many Anabaptists participated in the defense of Munster, the Anabaptists have often been blamed for the excesses of Matthias and Leyden. At the time, people said this is proof that Baptists are terrible people. In history books written 500 years later, people take the position that this is proof the Anabaptists were wild and out of control. And a lot of Anabaptists had flocked to Munster because there was religious freedom there. So there were a lot of Anabaptists involved in defending the city. It should be remembered, however, that both men were ordained Lutheran preachers. Neither of these men who are blamed for what's considered an Anabaptist atrocity were themselves in any sense Baptist. They were both ordained Lutheran preachers and both practiced infant baptism. They also denied the sole authority of Scripture because they believed they were receiving revelation from God directly, which meant the Bible wasn't the only authority. It was not the Bible that told those young women of Munster to marry Leyden. It was Leyden's revelations that told them to marry Leyden. They did not believe the Bible was the only authority. Let's stop and take a break right here. We'll come back at 9 and pick up with the Dutch Anabaptist.